ground.
Produced by 2SER and Guardian Australia for the Community Radio Network.
Welcome back to Common Ground, the podcast where we try to understand more about Australian politics by listening to a conversation between four completely different voters. My name's Lenore Taylor. I'm the editor of Guardian Australia. And this week, Sharon, Katrina, Josh and Steve jump into the very divisive issue of immigration and asylum policy in a conversation facilitated, as always, by leading social researcher Rebecca Huntley. Some of you may not agree with elements of the conversation you're about to hear, but that's actually part of the point of this experiment.
The topic of this week is immigration. Steve, you said that you think that the kind of conversation we're having in this country about immigration is, there's something wrong with it. What do you think about the kinds of discussions we're having about immigration?
I think they're often very, very contrasting sort of extreme views you can get. You know, we're just a far right and a far left opinion on both in sort of the in the mainstream debate. And I just felt like it needed to be a little bit more nuanced nowadays, sort of thing. And I think the Australian public is getting ready for that. I guess when I started working in immigration detention, you know, I was an idealistic 25-year-old, you know, the big bad system, you know, these people are fleeing violence and war and all that sort of thing. And so I was very idealistic about the whole thing. When I actually started working there, a few of my premises I found for my assumptions were wrong. So when I was working in the centres, what we had was we had a lot of really nice, really good family-orientated sort of middle-class Iranian people. But I couldn't honestly say that you could class them as refugees. They were people who were seeking a better life for their family, you know, better economic opportunities and all that sort of thing. A lot of them were amazing people, but they were not refugees. And I felt that's where it got a bit tricky.
But why did you think they weren't refugees?
Oh, some would tell me. Some would tell me straight up, like, look, I have a relative here who's got a business and that sort of thing. Don't get me wrong. Like, they're living in a hard place. It's not an easy place to live. They are oppressed to a certain extent, but are they being burnt out of their homes or are they in more need than someone who's in a very dire situation or in conflict? Probably not.
I mean, it's interesting. What's your experience, Steve, doesn't seem to largely stack up. I mean, most of the time the immigration department finds about 90% of asylum seekers are, well, certainly between 2010 and 2013, 90% of asylum seekers who came by vote were deemed to be refugees, so fleeing persecution. They might have also had family here, also want to come here for a better life, but they're coming from countries like Iran, Afghanistan, Sri Lanka, Pakistan, and these are places where it's not just that the economy is bad, there's lots of places like that, but where there's violence and persecution as well.
Definitely, and I can only speak from my experience, and the three centres I worked at, which were more family-orientated, so that people with more money, I can say that's the experience I had, that there was a large chunk that were economic migrants who were living in an oppressive country but did not seem to be directly fleeing persecution or in danger or in any danger to themselves. To me, where it gets complicated is preferencing people, you know? Do you give that visa to that person who's in that situation, who's oppressed but not in danger, or would you give it to someone in South Sudan who's in a camp on the outskirts of town with very little resources? You know, you hear stories of people boiling grass because they've got nothing to eat. So I think that's where it gets more, it's a hard thing to do, but you have to preference certain people over others.
I'm going to go now to Katrina. Have you got any reflections on what Stephen has just said, and also your view about the discussion about immigration in Australia?
I think we've got the discussion sort of got out of kilter, because the asylum seeker thing is a very, very small proportion of immigration into this country. And we seem to have just got locked in on the asylum seeker issue. And I think why we've got locked in on it is because I think everybody wants to feel secure. And I think with the whole ISIS thing going on overseas, there is a fear. I think people have become fearful of maybe in amongst those boat people, there are terrorists. I honestly think that's what people think. And they may be, they may be not. But the way we treat boat people is different to the way we treat, obviously, other migrants that come to this country. And that's the vexed issue. The vexed issue are the unauthorised boat arrivals and how you deal with them. And that's been the cause of the rise of Nauru and PNG, those detention centres, you know, the processing offshore. I think it's unfortunate that we have our discussion on immigration just centres around boat people.
I would agree with that end statement. That there is a disproportionate emphasis on boat arrivals when there's a myriad of people arriving, arriving in many different ways.
Absolutely agree with what Steve said. I think you're right about the boat people too. I don't know why that is. More about the boat people. I think maybe it's the Australian cultural thing that they feel that they're queue jumpers and so forth.
Is the whole issue of immigration something you feel anxious about talking about in public, or you feel like people will make assumptions about you?
Yeah, absolutely. You're very careful where you discuss it. I think most people are silenced on it. If you have any, if you're not, this is the whole, getting back to Steve, if you're not all, yes, everyone come to Australia and all, wonderful. If you have any issues with it, then regardless of what they are, people will generally scream you into silence. I actually think we need to cut immigration right down at this point in time. Our country is in so much debt that we can't really... I don't think we can stop it, nor do I think we should, but I think it needs to be slowed down. And I think there's a lot of the issues about resentment because people are having difficulty paying their bills and their standard of living is going down. And they see the government just bringing in hundreds of thousands of people.
To you, Josh, what do you think about when you look at the debate about immigration, how intense it is and how, do you think it's a polarised view? When you look at the discussion around asylum seekers, how does it make you feel?
Well, in terms of where I personally stand, I think that the idea of migration targets that I think the Greens proposed was, you know, taking a certain amount of refugees a year. I think they're silly simply because it's a policy that assumes that there are going to be refugees. And I think that what you should be dedicated to is ensuring that the world is in such a state that people don't have to flee their homes to move overseas. You know, the situation overseas is so, in some places, so heated that like people really have no choice. They've got landmines in their village, so their children can't leave their house. They have to walk miles to get water because their wells have been poisoned by, you know, ISIS. So it's just, I think that we should be devoting ourselves to reducing the amount of people who have to leave in the first place.
As somebody who's worked really closely with asylum seekers, Stephen, what's been your experience, actual personal experience with asylum seekers?
My experience generally, I mean, there's such a diverse range of people seeking asylum. So it's just like the rest of the population. You get a few people that annoy you, you get a few people that you really like, and, you know, it's I would say most of them just average folks, you know? Lots of them really nice folks, you know? So that's been my experience.
For the rest of you, does Steve's experience surprise you at all?
No, not at all. But I think it's the handful of people. Now, I think one of the issues is, we used to have a policy of assimilation, and I'm just not quite sure, you know, what's happened to that. But, you know, one of the problems, you know, is the problem of values. So we have you know, some people coming into this country whose values are so totally different to ours. They don't think the same, they think completely differently.
When you use the term assimilation, what do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean by that is people who come to this country, and whilst they bring, you know, their own culture into this country, they also are happy to be involved in our society and our culture, with and respect our laws and just get involved in our community as well.
Yeah, so it sounds like to me that, Katrina, maybe your definition of assimilation is more like multiculturalism. Like, in a sense that you're not saying that they have to be like Australians or have to mimic Australian culture. You're saying they can practice their own culture, but they have to sort of respect Australian law and respect, you know,
yeah.
Is that
yeah.
what you're saying? Yeah, so I think maybe your definition is wrong, that you're more talking about a multicultural society.
Yeah, but that's what assimilation is.
Not the definition I've heard, but you know, there might be a few definitions.
I feel like they are distinct, and to me that sounds like something different to assimilation, because in my head I would consider assimilation to be not adapting into the culture, but adopting the culture that you've moved into. That's what I would consider assimilation to be like. So if they went from being a distinctly Greek community into, you know, just a Australian.
And so what do you think
community.
We are? What do you think we are right now?
We're definitely, I think, a multicultural society. And I think that's a good thing overall.
Sharon, any thoughts at this stage before I move on to my next topic?
I think Australians have... I think the problem is more Islam than anything. That seems to be the biggest problem. And I think that's where the distrust comes from. And it comes back to what Steve said. And I don't know if I'm off topic, but I just think there's some real problems with the religion, and no one ever addresses that. Like, it's not allowed to talk about that. Like, I think women are so oppressed, and you see women running around covered from head to toe, and that's where the divide comes from. That's where people's distrust comes from. And I don't understand why you don't try and address that. I don't understand that. People, women are so oppressed. I think that they say it's a religion of peace. I think it's the religion of male dominance and female submissiveness. And the religion clearly has a lot of problems, but that's never addressed. It's always just brushed over. So, and it comes back to what Steve said. You can't talk about it. There's no open discussion about that.
Okay. So I wanted to get a bit of a sense about why people felt that connection between asylum seekers and terrorism. What's the basis for that?
I'm definitely no expert, that's for sure. But I just had a bit of a thought, was just that I didn't make that strong a connection in a way. So I didn't think I did. But my main concern with all that going on is I kind of feel like it's the Australian government's job to regulate who comes into the country and by what matter. If we have a more unregulated system with a lot of asylum seekers coming, like you're basically sort of outsourcing that service, and that can lead to problems. And if there is one out of 20,000 that happens to be, that's going to have bad repercussions for refugee advocacy. So it's a precarious situation in that sense.
So you're kind of saying that unless we highly control this process, that it could backfire on asylum seekers here or advocacy, because there could be some kind of slip-up or disaster, or what do you mean?
Well, I'll give you an example that's slightly related. All right, I guess, like, say you had Holland a while back, who had a very well-intentioned open system with asylum seekers and refugees, you know? They were kind of paving the way, a sort of very left-wing open system. It didn't work out that well for them. And there was kind of, I'm not sure what was real on the ground, but there was a public perception that they were being taken for a ride, basically. That it was too unregulated, some undesirable folks were coming into the country, and what did they have as a result of that? They had Gert Wilder almost gone in, you know what I mean? There was a knee-jerk reaction to that that wasn't good. So it needs to be, I feel it needs to be a very regulated, supported system that we have, not a random one. That's part of the reason okay. why, yeah.
I want to move a bit now to talk a little bit about, let's forget about where the people are coming from. Let's just look at the numbers. So the Australian Bureau of Statistics kind of think that in the next 50 years, about 10 million migrants will come into Australia. I suppose I want to get everybody to reflect on this idea about how they would feel about if we had a lot more people coming here, and it wouldn't really matter where. It could be New Zealand, it could be, you know, it could be from Syria, it could be from Canada, it could be from Switzerland. So let's not talk about where they're from. Let's just think about bodies in the country. How do people feel about the idea that we would have a big population in Australia? I want to go to you, Steve, on this.
All right, so I should invest in land soon then.
That's what you think, do you, when you think about...
Yeah, so my immediate thoughts, like everyone, you know, it's like, you know, you have a fear of population growth. I think I have that, you know what I mean? Where you're like, oh, I like small Australia. I like 20 million Australia. I like Brisbane being 1.5 million people that I can still get around to play a basketball game in the afternoon in 20 minutes, you know? That sort of thing. You know, I don't want any more density and things like that, but that is just my thoughts, and I recognise that it's inevitable that the population is going to grow. So my immediate thoughts, like, oh, damn, I wish it would stay the size it is now. But at the same time, hey, you'll never stop it, you know? The population's growing. In a way, it's kind of a good sign, you know, that people are healthy and the economy's good.
So do you buy the economic argument that more migrants create more wealth for everybody? So more taxpayers for better infrastructure, you know, care for the, you know, make sure that the pension and all the other things that the government need improve, and all the other kinds of things that they say come from more people create wealth.
To a certain extent, I guess, in our current capitalist system, yes, that is the case, isn't it? That you need constant growth in a certain way. So I don't know the way around that. I'm not an economist, you know. But, yeah, I buy it in the current system that we're in right now. I also recognise that we're an ageing population, you know, so that immigration is important for that factor.
Okay. Sharon?
Yes.
Yeah, we know a bit about your view about this, but I suppose if suddenly we got more and more migrants come to Australia, again, regardless of where they came from, how do you think it would impact your life and your family? Would it be all negative?
More negative, yeah, mostly negative, yeah.
And can you explain what you think would happen?
Well, in 50 years from now...
Or even in the next 10 or 15.
Oh, the next 10 or 15 may not be too bad, but look at Sydney roads now. It's that congested. It needs to be sprawled and needs to be better planned. But there's potentially a worldwide shortage of food and water. So wouldn't you, to me, that's just crazy, you would take care of our population, which will grow anyway. So I don't know why you would risk that. And why do we want that? For what purpose? I don't understand why.
Is the concern for you about immigration around the economics or around the societal change, or both?
Oh, I'd probably steer more towards economics, really. It impacts it's our standard of living, you know, how it impacts that, I guess, and that probably is economical, yeah. Both, absolutely both, but probably more economical. It just doesn't add up to me. I don't understand why we want to be this heavily populated nation and living on top of each other. I've got units popping up all around me now. Like, why? Like, why do we want that? I don't understand.
And why do you think governments do it?
To get re-elected.
Is there anything that could... Do you think that... and when you said that you don't want to... You just want to slow it down, is there a pace that you'd be comfortable with?
oh, I don't know, I'm no expert in that manner. We still will, you know, we always want immigration. I'm not anti-immigration, but not to the numbers we've got. I don't know how we sustain that as our resources. How do you sustain that?
Yeah.
What happens to the rest of the world? We're a very fortunate country in that regards. There's other countries that can't maintain their food source. They've got to import it. And we have that, although the government's selling most of it off, I have to say. But, you know, we wouldn't probably be able to sustain ourselves, but if we become this huge nation, how do we sustain ourselves?
Katrina, the other thing that gets said about the idea that we bring more migrants is that, you know, potentially it's a boon for regional Australia if they move to regional Australia, but, you know, largely when migrants come here, they tend to want to stay in the cities. So I'm interested in your view of the connection between immigration and let's say, economic prosperity.
Well, first of all, you need immigrants. If your population is going to grow, you basically need immigrants, but you don't want your immigration numbers to be greater than your economic growth. I mean, they sort of go hand in hand, you know? Because you don't want 10 million people coming here and joining the ranks of the unemployed, do you? Yeah.
How do you think somebody who, let's say, was an asylum seeker from Syria and happened to be also Muslim, how would they feel, do you think, coming to a town of your size? Would they be the only people like
you'd have
them
to
in
ask
town?
Them. You'd have to ask them, not me. I mean, we have...
No, but you know your town. How do you think people would receive that?
Look, I think people are fine. I just don't... I mean, we just recently had a doctor here from... He was from, not Uganda, but he was, you know, worked here as a doctor doing a locum, and I don't think anybody... even sort of really, I didn't hear one single person talk about it, you know, make a comment. So, I mean, I only know that because I went to see him a couple of times. So, you know, I never heard anybody make comments about that. So I can't see that people would, I think if they thought that they were a member of ISIS, they might get worried, you know, they might be a bit concerned.
Your views?
Well, yeah, I guess this is also where I diverge from like mainstream left political thought in that I don't think that we should have more people. I think Big Australia is like a misguided idea, and I do believe that yes, migrants do create more wealth, but the question is more wealth for who? Because even with increased migration, you have increased inequality in the fact is just that we have like more than enough wealth in this country. It's just not going to the right places. And so I think that's something to consider when you're talking about more wealth being brought in, because it depends on what the government does with it. They could, you know, use it to build more infrastructure, or they could use it to cut a tax they had on billionaires so that, you know, someone overseas can afford their yacht with a private museum on it.
So was that discussion of asylum seekers and immigration what you hear typically in focus groups?
Yes, it wasn't entirely surprising. It quite typical of the kinds of responses to the issue of asylum seekers that I've gotten in groups of all kinds across the country, including first and second generation migrant groups over the last 10 years. And so what tends to happen is if you raise the issue of immigration, or you raise the issue of multiculturalism, or you raise the issue of asylum seekers, all different issues, but suddenly they get tied in together and the conversation can go in a lots of different directions, or, you know, very quickly. It can go to terrorism and security, it can go to the state of the economy, it can go to issues around social and cultural heritage. It can go in a million directions. It's become about so much. It hasn't just become about how
the
many...
The facts and figures of
exactly.
who's coming and how.
Exactly.
I was really interested in how quickly and seamlessly we moved from discussing asylum seekers coming by boat to national security issues. I mean, I guess it probably shouldn't be surprising, because politicians often link those concepts even when sort of factually they're not necessarily linked. But, you know, that was a fairly accepted concept in that conversation.
Yes, and I think it goes back to, I mean, it goes back before Tampa, but Tampa was that moment, we'll control who comes here and who doesn't, and we need to control our borders, you know, the orderly queue and all the rest of it. So,
and I guess when the major parties both accept the broad tenets of asylum policy, like there's some differences, but essentially they have similar policies, then there's not very many people in the public space mounting a different argument.
No, I think that's right. And then often what's really clear is that even though there was a recognition largely across the groups that we're not talking about a massive, you know, we're not talking about 50% of asylum seekers, there's this kind of view of all it takes is one, and that one is enough. So prepared to close, you know, shut the door, close the gate, just to prevent even that one in 10,000. So such is the level of anxiety around this.
And probably similar reasons behind this sort of easy use of the term economic refugee, even though technically if someone comes for economic reasons, then they're not found to be a refugee. But that was, you know, that was easily used in the conversation and in an unchallenged fashion.
That's exactly right. And again, it goes to this, you know, lack of understanding, which you can understand the lack of understanding about what it takes to become, what it takes to actually be accepted as an asylum seeker here. And also this general sense of that, you know, asylum seekers are like a whole lot of other people, dole bludgers, you know, kind of gaming the system, pretending that they are something that they're not.
And yet at the same time, when there's a personal experience, real compassion for people. Like there's both,
yes,
the real fear, absolutely, of the amorphous idea and real compassion and interaction with actual people.
That's actually right. And so when I get asked sometimes, what do people think about asylum seekers? I go, well, what aspect do they, what are you talking about? It's now become such a complex issue. So you might have somebody who says, we shouldn't be detaining people in offshore detention for long periods of time. We shouldn't be detaining children, but we should have less people come into Australia. So it's absolutely possible for people to believe those things that seem to be contradictory, but at the same time.
Thanks to Rebecca Huntley, our podcast editor Miles Martignoni, and our collaborators at 2SER, Emma Lancaster, Taylor Fuller, Miles Herbert and Emma Rappaport.
Common Ground is heard on your local station through the Community Radio Network.
Let's enjoy new stuff, old stuff, a real variety.
My pleasure.
And yay!
2SER 107.3.
Give me that organ! From coast to coast, the sound of now. Come on!
Come here, man.
Yo, man, what's up?
Yo, come here over here to make this telephone call. Yeah, let me call this girl. Come on, baby, pick it up.
Hi, Mr. DJ.
Suck it to him one more time.